Namaskaram. Om Namo Bhagavate Sri Arunachala Ramanaya. Today I'm going to, I want to talk about an aspect of Bhagavan's teachings, but has been, the importance of which has been, and the significance of which have been sadly overlooked due to misinterpretation or a failure to understand what it actually means. I wrote an article and posted an article on my blog about this at the end of November. The article is called the Ramana Mahavakya, Nan Nan or Ahamaham, I am I. So it's about this statement that Bhagavan used in so many places, Nan Nan or Ahamaham. The correct meaning of this statement is I am I, but unfortunately, in most English books, it has been translated as I hyphen I. The reason for this is in Tamil and Sanskrit, if you in a sentence such as I am this, it is not necessary to say explicitly use the word am. You simply say I this. The am is understood. This is a feature of many, many languages. It is the technical term for it is zero copula. That is, if you're saying I am this, the am is not necessary. Or in any sentence, if you want to say this is a table, you say this table, and the is understood there. The copula, the verb that connects them, is understood. So when Bhagavan says Nan Nan or Ahamaham, what he means is I am I. As far as I'm aware, there's only one English book that was published in Bhagavan's lifetime was this correctly expressed. That is, there's a passage in Mahayoga where Lakshman and Shama wrote, it's on page 150 in the 2002 edition. That's in the ninth chapter. What Lakshman Sharma wrote there is, the mind becomes reduced to the state of pure consciousness and begins to shine steadily in its pure form as the formless I. The sage calls this formless consciousness I am I, to distinguish it from the ego sense, which has the form I am this. So Lakshman Sharma had good fortune of studying Uludu Napadu under Bhagavan's own guidance. Bhagavan explained to him many times the meaning of the verses. So because of his very close association with Bhagavan, he was able to understand correctly what Bhagavan meant when he said Nan Nan. It means I am I. And Bhagavan often used this term I am I to distinguish it from I am this. I am this is ego. I am I is what we actually are. There's a passage in a well-known passage in Maharshi's gospel on this. I think it's the sixth chapter of the first part of Maharshi's gospel. There's a portion where someone asks a question, is it not our duty to be patriots? And Bhagavan answers, your duty is to be and not to be this or that. I am that I am sums up the whole truth. The method is summarized in be still. And what does stillness mean? It means destroy yourself, because every name and form is the cause of trouble. And then what is the particular sentence I want to point out is the next two sentences. I is the self. I am, that's I hyphen I is how it's printed. I am this is ego. Here, what Bhagavan actually said is, we can see from talks actually, because the same thing is recorded in talks. In talks, the words Bhagavan used are also recorded. It's in talks how it's recorded. This is on in talk section 363. The same thing about your duty is not to be this or that. I am sums up the whole truth. Then it goes on. It's slightly different. That is, I think what's in Maharshi's gospel is a slightly condensed form of what was recorded in talks. Because in talks, after saying what does be still, what does stillness means, it means destroy yourself. Then Bhagavan says, because any form or shape is the cause of trouble, give up the notion I am so-and-so. Our sastras say, ahamiti spurati, it shines as I. And then the next question is, what is spurana, shining? And then Bhagavan says, ahamaham, I is how it's printed, ahamaham is the self. Aham idam is the ego. Ahamidam means I am this. It's correctly translated in talks as I am this. But instead of translating ahamaham as I am I, which is what it actually means, it was translated as I hyphen I. So now when we rise as ego, we're always aware of ourselves as I am this. That is, we experience ourselves as this body consisting of five sheaths. So I am this. This refers to the body. But what we actually are is not this or that. What we actually are is only I. So I am I is awareness of ourself as ourself alone. Not awareness of ourself as this or that, but only as I. So that is what Bhagavan means by I am I. In talks, he then goes on to say, shining is always there, but ego is transitory. When I is kept up as I alone, in other words, I am I, it is the self. When it flies off as a tangent and says this, it is ego. Similarly, in Maharshi's gospel, it's more or less the same. When I is kept up as the I alone, it is the self. When it flies off as a tangent and says, I am this or I am that, I am such and such, it is ego. So Bhagavan was the reason Bhagavan, well, one of the reasons why Bhagavan used this term, I am I, was to distinguish our real nature, which is just I, from ego, which is always identifying itself with this or that. So as Bhagavan often said, I am this or I am that is ego. I am I is our real nature. That is, what is our real identity? Now we have a false identity. We identify ourselves with this body as I am this. Our real identity is only I am I. That is, what actually exists is only I. So we cannot be anything other than I. We cannot be anything other than ourselves. So what is our real identity? It is only I am I. One of the preliminary qualifications for but is said in many, many ancient texts, in Viveka Chudamani and so many other ancient texts, they talk about the qualifications to follow this path of jnana. The qualifications are nitya, anitya, vastu, viveka, vairagya, and then samadhi, shakka, sampatti, that six particular qualifications, and mumukshutva, aspiration for liberation. So the first of the qualifications is nitya, anitya, vastu, viveka. That means distinguishing what is eternal from what is ephemeral. When we consider our experience, whatever we experience is ephemeral, it's transitory. All phenomena appear and disappear. All objects appear and disappear. Even the subject, namely ego, appears and disappears. In waking and dream, we're aware of ourselves as I am this body, that is ego. And consequently, we're aware of so many other things. In sleep, we are not aware of ourselves as I am this or that. We are aware of ourselves just as I am. So ego, the adjunct mixed awareness, I am this, is itself transitory. So that is, the subject is transitory. All objects obviously are transitory. So what in our experience is permanent? There's something more fundamental than ego. Ego is the is the mixed awareness, I am this body, but this body is what comes and goes. In waking, we're aware of ourselves as this waking body. In dream, we're aware of ourselves as some other body. So the adjuncts are impermanent. What is permanent in ego is only that fundamental awareness I am. Throughout all states of awareness, the one thing that we are always aware of, we are aware of our own existence. This fundamental awareness of our own existence, I am, this alone is permanent. So since this alone is permanent, how can we be anything other than I am? So the ultimate truth is, I am I. I am nothing other than I am. I am what I am. This is why Bhagavan often used to refer to the statement in the Old Testament, in Exodus, I think it's chapter 3, verse 14, when the voice of God speaks to Moses from a burning bush and tells him to go to Egypt lead his people out of Egypt. Moses asks Jesus, asks God, asks the burning bush, who shall I, if they ask me what your name is, what shall I say? Who shall I say has sent me? So his question was, what is your name? And the name that God gives, this is hugely significant. This is possibly the most significant of all the most significant sentence in the whole of the Bible. God reveals his name. I am that I am. And then he goes on to say, say that I am has sent you. This is why Bhagavan often said, I am is the first name of God. In fact, in the very same passage I was referring to earlier in Maharsha's Gospel, after Bhagavan says, when the I is kept up as I only, it is the self. When it flies off at a tangent and says, I am this or I am that, I am such and such, it is ego. The next question is, who then is God? And Bhagavan says, the self is God. I am is God. Bhagavan often used to say, the first name of God is I am. Even Om is second to I am. Because Om is the sound form of Brahman, but the original form of Brahman, the pure form of Brahman, is I. That is, I is the natural name of all of us. We all refer to ourselves as I or I am. So more than any other name of God, this is the appropriate name, because God is that which is always shining in our heart as I. If we remove the adjuncts, now we're aware of ourselves as I am this, I am Michael, or I am whoever. If we remove the adjuncts, what remains is just I am. That I am is God. As Bhagavan says in Upadesha Undia, verses 24 and 25. In verse 24, Bhagavan says, Irakam Ekayal Isa Jivagal Orupolare Aba. That means in their existing nature, God and soul are one substance, are only one substance. Upadi Unave Veru. It's only the awareness of adjuncts that is different. So we are aware of ourselves as a small person, this little body limited in time and space. So we seem to be a small finite creature, and we consider God to be the infinite whole. So we have certain idea about God and a certain idea about ourselves. What distinguishes us from God is the ideas that we have about ourselves and the ideas that we have about God. These ideas are the upadis, the adjuncts. If you remove the adjuncts, what remains is just the substance. The substance, what he refers to here is oruporale, or the ekum eke. Oruporale means the one substance alone. Irakum Eke means the being nature, the existing nature. That is I am. That is what we essentially are. So in the next verse, verse 25, he says, Tane upadi vittu ovadu tan isan tane unavadam undipara tanai olivadal undipara. That means knowing or being aware of oneself without adjuncts is itself knowing God, because God, it literally means because of shining as oneself. That implies because God is what always shines as oneself. So God is that which is always shining in our heart as I am. So if we know us, now we know ourselves as I am this, that is the problem. If we remove the this, if we remove the adjuncts and know ourselves just as I am, that is knowing God. So what we actually are is only I. Therefore, I am I. That is what that is the logic of what Bhagavan is, why Bhagavan attached so much importance to, I mean, why he said this biblical saying is so significant, and why he attached so much importance to, why he used this term, nan-nan or aham-aham, which means essentially the same as I am that I am. That is, I am I. I am. What am I? I am only I am. I'm nothing other than I am. So that's the significance of that biblical saying. So I am is the natural name of ourself. It is also the natural name of God. That's why Bhagavan always said, I am is the first name of God. All other names of God are secondary. That's why that statement in the Bible is so significant. And there's an important statement in the New Testament also, but Bhagavan often used to point out when Jesus says, before Abraham was, I am. That is, all biblical scholars will equate these two, but the I am God that Jesus referred to when he said before Abraham was I am is the same I am that the burning bush referred to when the voice of God in the burning bush, when he said I am that I am. So as Bhagavan pointed out, when Jesus said before Abraham was I am, he didn't say before Abraham was I was. He said, before Abraham was, I am. Because I am is eternal. I am is timeless. It is beyond these three divisions of time, of past, present, and future. Because I am is ever-present. It is eternal. What is it that makes the present moment seem to be present? Why is this moment now? Why is this point in space here? What is it? What is the presence that makes the present time and the present place present? It is only the presence of I am. Now, because now we are aware of ourselves as I am this body, but in this, we cannot be aware of ourselves as I am this body without this essential awareness I am. So the essential awareness I am, this is what is eternal. This is what we actually are. Therefore, I am I. So this statement, aham-aham or nan-nan, that Bhagavan used in so many places is hugely significant. And we need to understand that what it means is not I, but I am I. Because if we say I-I, what does that actually mean? It's not at all clear what I means. But when it said I am I, then it's a whole sentence. It has a whole meaning. And that is the actual meaning of aham-aham or nan-nan. So this is because of this misinterpretation, mistranslation, it has been, the significance of this term, everyone knows it's significant, but the real significance of it has been missed in many English books because of this unfortunate mistranslation of nan-nan as I instead of I am I. I referred earlier to Maharshi's gospel and talks. We can find in so many places Bhagavan is using this term. As they say, most English books it put as I-I, but it actually means I am I. But Bhagavan used it not only in when answering questions, he also used it a lot in many, many of his verses. So I'll just discuss some of the verses in which Bhagavan used this term. when Bhagavan translated Vivekachudamani into Sanskrit, he wrote a Mangalam verse for it in Tamil. That Mangalam verse is, the first word of each of the four lines is aham, because Bhagavan attaches so much importance to aham. In Tamil, aham actually has two meanings. That is, there is a native Tamil word, a word that is native to the Tamil language, aham. Aham means inside, interior, and therefore it means the heart, it means home. So that is the Tamil word, aham. But in Sanskrit, aham is the first person singular nominative form of the nominative singular form of a first person pronoun, I. So, and because many Sanskrit words are very freely used in Tamil, the fact that aham also means I is also understood. So Bhagavan often used aham with a double meaning in Tamil. For example, he often used the term ahamukam. Ahamukam means, we can take it to mean either facing inwards or facing I, because aham means both inside, the Tamil meaning of the pure Tamil word, and it means I, the loan word from Sanskrit. So ahamukha is a term that Bhagavan often used to describe the practice of self-investigation. What are we doing? We are facing inwards. We are facing, what does inwards mean? It means only towards I, because everything other than I is extraneous to ourselves, it's external. So attending to anything other than I is bahyamukam, it's facing outwards. Attending to I is antamukam or ahamukam. So that's one example of a place where Bhagavan uses aham with a double meaning. Another place is in the very first verse of Arunachalamalai. Arunachala mena ahamainine pava ahateve rarupai Arunachala. There, the first aham, Arunachala mena ahamei, that aham can be interpreted in two ways, and it is we can suppose it's intended to have two meanings, because both meanings are appropriate and they're complementary. That is, if we take it in the Tamil sense of inside or the heart, ahame means in the heart. If we take it in the Tamil sense, in the Sanskrit sense, aham means I. So Arunachala mena ahame, Murugana changed that around when he was explaining the meaning, because Murugana is very skillful in how to interpret Tamil. Murugana changed the phrase Arunachala mena ahame as Arunachala me aham ena. That is, Arunachala alone is I. That is, what is shining in the heart of each one of us is I. So Arunachala mena ahame nire pava. Those who think in the heart that Arunachala, we can take both meanings, we can combine both meanings of aham. So those who think in the heart that Arunachala alone is I, you root out their ego. Ahate verarupai. There Bhagavan uses ahate, he's using the Sanskrit word aham, but giving it a Tamil case ending as ahate. That is, what he refers to as I there is ego. What is that I that is to be rooted out? It's ego. It's the false adjunct mixed awareness I. So by thinking that Arunachala alone is I, in other words, by meditating on I alone, that is, if we have the conviction that Arunachala alone is I, how do we meditate on Arunachala? Only by meditating on I, or meditating on I alone. As Bhagavan says in verse 8 of Upadesha Undia, Anya bhavatin ahamaham avanahamahum ananya bhava me undipara anetim utumum undipara. Anya means other. Ananya means not other. So Anya Bhavam means meditation on what is other. In this context, it means meditation on God as if God was something other than ourselves. So rather than Anya Bhava, rather than meditating on God as something other than oneself, Abhanaham Aham Ananya Bhavam. And Ananya Bhavam means meditation on what is not other. And then Bhagavan adds a relative clause there, Abhanaham Aham, in which he is I. That is, with the understanding that God is I alone, how do we meditate on God? We don't meditate on anything other than I. So that is what Bhagavan means by Abhanaham Aham Ananya Bhavame. And so he says, rather than the Anya Bhava, rather than meditating on God as something other than ourselves, meditating on God as nothing other than oneself, with the conviction that he is I, that's the implied meaning, with the conviction, anatinam uttamam, that is the best among all. So rather than taking Arunachala to be something other than ourselves, recognizing that Arunachala is that which is shining in our heart as I, and therefore meditating on I alone, that is the way to eradicate ego. So I just cited that here as an example of the way Bhagavan uses this term aham in many places in his Tamil verses, with a double meaning, both to refer to inside or the heart and to refer to what we actually are. So in this Mangalam verse of Bibhakuchudamani, Bhagavan is using this word aham in both senses. That is, in the first line, he says, ahamenam mula avidye ahandrida, to remove or ahandrida means so it may depart, so that the root ignorance, the mula avidya, called I. Here Bhagavan is making it very clear, but what is called in all the ancient texts, it is said, of the ancient texts of Advaita, it is said, what is the root problem? The root problem is avidya. Avidya means ignorance of our own real nature. What is that ignorance of our own real nature? It is that which is called I. Of that root ignorance called I, ahamenam mula avidya. So in other words, what Bhagavan is implying here is that what is called avidya is nothing but ego. Why? Because ego, we are never actually ignorant of ourselves. We always know ourselves as I am. What is called avidya is not actually ignorant. It is a wrong knowledge of ourselves. That is, we are always aware of ourselves as I am. But instead of being aware of ourselves as just I am, we're aware of ourselves as I am this body. I am such and such a person. That adjunct mixed awareness, that is ego. So that ego alone is that ego is the wrong aware, the false awareness of ourself, awareness of ourself as something other than what we actually are. That is what seemingly conceals the real awareness of ourself. So the avidya, according to Bhagavan, is nothing but ego. So to remove that avidya called I, in other words, to remove ignorance, and he refers to it as mula avidya, that is the root of all ignorance, is nothing but ego. To remove that, how can we remove it? He says, the second line is, ahamaham aha alam pahalam. Then the next line is, aham oli atma devan padatinil. That means, in the feet of atma deva, who shines aham here means the heart, who shines in the heart, alam alum pahal ara. That means without day or night. In other words, he shines eternally, unaffected by day and night, unaffected by the appearance of ego or the disappearance of ego, whether ego appears or not. That which all that is the appearance of ego, we can call it as night. The subsidence of ego, we can call it day. We can take it, but Bhagavan is using, that's what Bhagavan means by night and day, whether ego appears or disappears, that which always shines. And how does it shine? Aham, 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 aha, as I am I. So Atmadeva, that God who is always shining in our heart as I am I, then, so this is a prayer. So the last line he says, aham mahir vaha, as the inner joy, anisam ramikave. So that anisam ramikave means may we always delight. So the whole meaning of the verse is, so that the root ignorance called I may depart, may we always delight as inner joy in the feet of Atmadeva, who shines without night and day in the heart as I am I. So what is the means to root out this false ego is to meditate on that which is always shining, eternally shining in our heart as I am I. And Bhagavan refers to that which is shining in our heart as I am I, as Atmadeva. Atma means oneself. Deva means God. But the root meaning of Deva is it comes from a verbal root in Sanskrit, div, which means to shine. So the reason why God is called Deva is that he is always shining in our heart as I am I. The English word, the English term divine, or the Latin deos, they all come from the same root. So it comes from they call it a Proto-Indo-European root. That is from a root language from which Sanskrit and the European languages derived, that this word div means to shine. So when we talk of divine, when we talk of divine nature, we're talking of that which is always shining. How is God always shining? He's always shining in our heart as I am. As I am I am nothing other than I. So this is why God is called Deva. So because he's ever shining in our heart as I am I. So how to root out this false awareness, I am this body? Only by constantly delighting with inner joy in the feet of that God who is always shining in our heart, night and day, without night and day, beyond night and day, unaffected by the night and day, unaffected by the passing of time, ever eternally, beyond time, shining in our heart as I am I. This is one example where Bhagavan uses this term, aham aham, and he also indirectly implies here, but the way to root out the false awareness I am this body is to meditate on that which is ever shining in our heart as I am I. That is, on that fundamental awareness of our own existence, our awareness of ourself as ourself alone. Only by meditating on that can we root out this false awareness I am this body. Another place where Bhagavan used the term aham aham is in the famous a verse, Hridya Guhara Madhye Kevalam Brahma Matram, Hyam Ahama Aham Iti Sakshat Atma Rupena Bhati. This is just the first two lines of this verse, but it's only these first two lines that we need to consider here. That is, what that means, we break it up. Hridya Guhara Madhye, in the center of the cave of the heart, that's in the very core of our being, kevalam brahma matram. Kevalam is here an adverb, solitarily. Brahma matram, Brahman alone, solitarily in the cave of our heart, he is an intensifier. We need not it just adds some force to the sentence. Then the second line is aham aham iti, as I am I, sakshat, directly, immediately, clearly, atma rupena, in the form of oneself, bhati, shines. So what is Brahman? Brahman is that which is ever shining in the heart, in the center, in the center of the cave of the heart of each and every one of us, as I am I. So I am I is the eternal reality. That is the true, that is when we, if we experience ourselves as I am I, that is experiencing ourselves as we actually are. Bhagavan also translated this verse into Tamil. It's verse 8 in Uludu Napadu Anabandham. It means, it's almost exactly the same. Idiyamam guheyil. That means, idiyamam guheyil napana. In the center of the cave, of which is the heart. Ekamam Brahma Matram. Whereas in Sanskrit he said Kevala Brahma Matram. Kevala is there an adverb meaning solitary. In Tamil he takes it as Ekamam, which is one. Brahman is one. What, in what sense is Brahman one? It is Ekam Eva Advaitiam. Brahman is one only without a second. So that which, what is that which is one only without a second? It is Brahman. And where is Brahman? It is ever shiny in our heart as I. How is it shiny in our heart? As shiny in our heart as I am I, as ourself. So in Tamil, it's Idiyamam Guheyin Napana, in the center of the cave, which is the heart. Brahman, which is one, implying one without a second, alone, adu, aham aham as I am I, nere, directly, aviyatidam, shining, anmabaha, as oneself. So what we actually are is only that Brahman, which is always shining in our heart as I. So this is another example of a place where Bhagavan both in Tamil and Sanskrit, Bhagavan used aham, 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 referring to ourselves. Then in in 1927 and 1928, Bhagavan composed three very important works. I think probably the first of these was Anma Vidai. This is the song, Murugana wanted Bhagavan to write a song expressing how easy is self-investigation. So Murugana wrote the Pallavi and the Anupallavi, the refrain and the sub-refrain for a kirtana, and asked Bhagavan to write the charanangal, the verses. So in the second verse of Anma Vidai, what Bhagavan says is, Una udal iduve nanam enum ninevu ninebe nana ninevugal se or na enum adanal. That means, since this the thought, this the body composed of flesh itself is I, alone is the one thread on which the various thoughts are strung. When a garland is made with on a single thread, so many flowers are tied to that thread. So what makes the garland is that thread. And so Bhagavan compares that thread that makes the garland, or if you've got a necklace of gems, but the thread that goes through the gems, linking them all together. So this is the analogy Bhagavan uses. That is, why is this one, this thought, the body is I, why is this the one thread on which all the other thoughts are strung? Because the thought, the body is I, is itself is ego. ego is the subject. All other thoughts are objects. Objects cannot exist except in the view of the subject. So because all other thoughts exist only in the view of this first thought, I am this body, that is that which is aware of itself as I am this body is the implication. That is ego, which is always aware of itself as I am this body, is that which is aware of all other thoughts. So no other thought can exist without this first thought, ego. So that the ego, the false awareness, I am this body, is the one thread on which all other thoughts are strung. When we are not aware of ourselves as I am this body, as in sleep, there are no other thoughts. Whenever we are aware of ourselves as I am this body, there are so many other thoughts. All this vast universe, according to Bhagavan, is nothing but thoughts. All these thoughts appear only because we take ourselves to be I am this body. So this thought, I am this body, Bhagavan often refers to it as a root thought, but here he refers to it as the one thread on which the various other thoughts are strung. So since such is the case, he then goes on to say, nana idum edu endru ulponal. If one goes within, implying endru here implies in investigating, nana idum edu. We can take this nana idum edu in two senses. It can mean, what is the place from which I spreads out? Or it can mean, who am I? What is the place? What is the place means, what is the place where this I originates from? So if we go within, investigating ourselves, that investigating who am I? What is the place from which I've risen as I? What the place from which I've risen as I obviously doesn't mean literally a place in time and space. Bhagavan uses the term place often in a metaphorical sense to refer to ourself, the source from which we've risen as I. So if we go within investigating ourself, the source from which we've risen as I, ninevu galpoi, thoughts will cease. Guheul tanai tihrum anmanyaname. Apmanyana, that is pure, apmanyana means pure self-awareness, will shine within the cave, that means within the cave of the heart, tanai, of its own accord, nan nan ena, as I am I. So when we go within investigating who we, what we actually are, what we will experience is we will cease to experience ourselves as I am this or I am that, because we will recognize, who am I? I am only I. So here Bhagavan uses the term nan nan. A few months later, in 1927, Bhagavan composed Upadesha Undia. In Upadesha Undia, in verse 19 of Upadesha Undia, Bhagavan says, nan endru erum idum edu ena nadavul nan tale saindidum undipara jnana vicharam idundipara. What that means is, when one investigates within, in other words, when we inwardly investigate, what is the place from which one rises as I? So what does Bhagavan mean by, when he says, what is the place from which one rises as I? As I said, he uses the term place here in a metaphorical sense. The place here means the source, that from which we rise as I. What, from what do we rise as I? The I that rises is the adjunct mixed I am this body, in other words, ego. So from where did this false awareness, I am this body, from where does it arise? It arises in waking and dream. It arises from what exists in sleep. What exists in sleep is only I am. It's only our fundamental awareness of our own existence, ourself as we actually are. So the place from which we rise as I is this fundamental awareness I am. In other words, ourself as we actually are. It's only from ourself that we rise as I. So the place from which we rise as I is ourself as this fundamental awareness I am. So when Bhagavan says one investigates, what is the place from which one rises as I, that means when one investigates this fundamental awareness I am, the awareness of our own existence, when we investigate that, what will happen? Nantale Sainditam. Nantale Sainditam literally means I will bend its head. But Tale Sainditam is a colloquial way in Tamil of saying to die. If someone dies, Tale Sainditam, his head is bent. So Nantale Sainditam is a colloquial way of saying I will die. Like in English, we have various colloquial ways of saying die, or he's kicked the bucket. What do we mean when we say he kicked the bucket? It means he's died. So like that, a colloquial way of saying die in Tamil is Tale Sainditam. So Nan Tale Sainditam means I will die. Literally, it means I will be headbent, but what it implies is I will die. So when we investigate the source from which we rise as I, this rising I will die. And then Bhagavan concludes this verse, Jnana Vichara Mid Undipara. This is Jnana Vichara. Jnana means awareness. Jnana Vichara means investigating awareness. What is the awareness we're investigating? Only the fundamental awareness I am. So when we investigate, I will die. Then in the next verse, he says, Nanandrutanatu, in the place where I merges, that is, he's referring to the place when I dies, it merges back into its source. So in the place where I merges, again, place here is using metaphorically, Nanan Endru, Ondru, Adu, Tana Hatondrame, Undipara, Tanadu Pundramam Undipara. What that means is, in the place where I merges, that, the one, appears spontaneously as I am I. That itself is the whole. The Tamil word pundram is a Tamil form of the Sanskrit word purna. That implies the infinite whole. That other than which there is nothing. That is, it is the totality of all that is. So that which shines as I am I, that is pundram. So and he refers to it as that, the one that actually, that implies, the one here, Andru, implies the one that actually exists. And it appears, Tanai has a double meaning. Tanai means both spontaneously of its own accord. It also means as oneself. So that which shines forth as I am I, that is where I, the I that is aware of itself as I am this or I am that, where that dies, what then remains is the clear awareness, the clear recognition, I am I. So that appears spontaneously. And that which appears spontaneously, that is always the true import of the word I, as Bhagavan goes on to say in verse 21. In verse 21, he says, Nanenum sopporul amadu nalame, nanatra tukotum undipara, namadinme nikatal undipara. That means, that, referring to that which shines forth as I am I, that is at all times the poral, the substance, or the true meaning, or the import of the word called I. Why? Because, then he puts it in a very beautiful word, nanatra tukatum namadimme nikatal. That literally means because of the exclusion of our non-existence, even in sleep, which is devoid of I. When he says sleep is devoid of I, he means it's devoid of a rising I, devoid of ego. The exclusion of our non-existence is a way of saying, because we don't cease to exist in sleep. So we remain as I am in sleep, even when the I that rises is absent. So in the absence of I, absence of ego, we remain as I am. So this I am, this I but is always shining as I am I, that is at all times the true import of the word I. So what I means is only I am I. Likewise, in Uludu Napadu, in verse 30 of Uludanapattu, that is what Bhagavan says in verses 19 and 20 of Upadeshundia. He says in one verse in Uludanapattu, in verse 30, this he composed a year later in 1928. What he says in verse 30 of Uludanapattu is Nana ena manam ul nadi ullum nanave. That what that means is as soon as the mind reaches the heart, inwardly investigating who am I, nanam aban tale nanamura. When he who is I dies, that in other words, that means when ego dies, when will ego die? Only when the mind goes deep within investigating who am I, when it goes so deep within that it reaches the heart. In other words, when the mind reaches the source from which it rose by inwardly investigating who am I, what will then happen? I will die, and what will then what then appears? One thing, how did he say? He says, "Nan nan a tondrum ondru tanaha." One thing appears spontaneously, or as oneself, as I am I, and then he says in the next sentence, "Tondrinum." Nan Andru, though it appears, it is not I. What does he mean by saying this? That is, the I that appears and disappears is ego. But here he's saying, though it appears, it is not I. Why does he say it appears then? Because he says that I am I is always shining in our heart. Then why does he say it appears? The sun is always shining in the sky, but it seems to be obscured when clouds get in the way. When the clouds are blown aside, the sun seems to appear anew, though it was always actually shining there. Likewise, that which is always shining in our heart as I am I, it appears with a fresh clarity when this cloud of ego, this false awareness, I am this body, when that is removed, what remains is I am I. So though it appears, because of a removal of ego, it seems to appear, but as soon as it appears, it is recognized to be that which is eternal, so it doesn't actually appear. That is the implication here. And then he says, Adu Pundra Poral, Poral Pundra Madu. That means, Poral means the substance, Pundra means Purna, the whole infinite whole. Adu means that. That is the infinite whole, that is the entire substance. That is the being. Substance means the reality, what alone is real. Bhagavan uses the analogy in verse 13 of Uludanapattu of gold and gold ornaments. He says the ornaments are unreal, but gold alone is real. Why? Because the gold is the substance. The ornaments are just different forms of that one substance. What is real is the substance, not the form. Because what is today a bangle, tomorrow it could be a necklace. So the substance remains the same, but form changes. So since form changes, form is unreal, substance alone is real. But what is the real substance? It's only that which is ever shining in our heart as I. That is the infinite whole. That is the true substance. Poral Pundram Pundra Poral is in Sanskrit, it would be the Purna Vastu, the infinite whole, the entire substance. And then he says, Tanam Poral, the substance that is oneself. So we ourselves are nothing but that substance, that which is ever shining in our heart as I. So like this, in so many verses, Bhagavan refers to the shining forth. In some places he says, Brahman is always shining as I am I. In these three verses, verse 2 of Upadeshundia, verse 2 of Anmabide, verse 20 of Upadesha Undia and verse 30 of Uludunapdu. He says it appears anew. Oh, and in Sanskrit also, in verse 20 of Upadesha Saram, he says the same thing. Ahami nasa bhaji aham aham teya spuriti hrit swayam paramapurna sat. It's very beautifully expressed here. Aham nasam bhaji means literally on I undergoing annihilation. In other words, when I, ego, is annihilated, spuriti hrit swayam, the heart shines forth spontaneously, aham aham teya, as I am I. The verb he uses here is spuriti, that shining. This is what he means by spurana, that shining forth of that clarity, that recognition of ourself as ourself alone. I am I. That recognition is what he refers to as the aham spurana, the clear, fresh shining of I. And then he says, paramapurna sat, that which shines as I am I, that is the supreme whole reality. Parama means the supreme, purna, the whole, sat, the reality, or what actually is. What actually exists is only I am I. So in so many places, Bhagavan is using this. And he also makes it clear that not only is I am I the goal, to recognize ourselves as I am I is the goal, but it's also the path. There's a passage in right at the beginning of Vichara Sangraham, arguably the most important passage in Vichara Sangraham is the very first subsection of the first section of Vichara Sangraham. There, Bhagavan, I'll just read the English, an English translation of that. Bhagavan says, for all sentient beings, one awareness naturally appears as I in all matters, such as I went, I came, I remained, I did, does it not? If one considered why that is, since activities such as going do not exist separately, but only in association with a body, it appears to be saying, does it not, that the body itself is I. But since the body does not exist before being born, since it is composed of the five elements, since it does not exist in sleep, and since it will depart as a corpse, is it appropriate to speak of it as the awareness I? It is not appropriate. The awareness that rises as I, referring to this body, to the body in this way, being intermediate here means it is neither Satchit nor is it the body. It is something that arises between the two, as Bhagavan says in verse 24 of Uludunapadu. So being intermediate, alone is what is called Tatboda. Tatboda literally means awareness of that, but it's a term that is often used in Advaitic literature to refer to ego. So it is what is often called Tatboda, Ahankara, that's ego, Avidya, ignorance, Maya, Malam, impurity, and Jiva. It's called by so many different names, but that is what is called ego or ahankara or avidya or maya or jiva or impurity. It is nothing but that I that rises as I am this body, is the implication. And then he goes on to say, is it proper for us to remain without investigating about this? For investigating, is it not, all sastras have come into existence and proclaimed that annihilation of that tatboda, that ego, alone is liberation. So the implication there, when he says for investigating, it's only to prompt us to investigate what is this I, but all sastras have come into existence. The ultimate purpose of all sastras is to urge us to investigate what is this I, the implication here. And that, and only by investigating that will we destroy ego, and that is liberation. So how the next day then Bhagavan goes on vichara padu epadi, how to investigate. If one asks how to investigate, the reply is, does this body, which is jada, non-aware, like a block of wood, come shining and behaving as I? It does not. Therefore, making the corpse body remain as a corpse and being without uttering I, even by word, that's by whether mentally or physically, or by speech, whether physically saying the word I or even mentally thinking the word I, that's what he implies by saying without uttering I. If one keenly investigates what is it but now shines as I, then in the heart, a kind of spuripu. Spuripu means a fresh clarity, a sporana. Alone will appear tanukutane, itself to itself, or oneself to oneself. In other words, we ourselves will shine to ourselves without sound as nan nan, as I am I. So if we keenly investigate, we keenly look within to see what is it but now shines as I, we will recognize there will be a fresh clarity will appear as I am I. And this fresh clarity will appear tanukutane. It will appear ourself to ourself. That is, we ourself will appear to ourself as ourself, is the implication, as I am I. And then he goes on to say, without leaving that, meaning without leaving that fresh clarity that shines as I am I, without leaving that sporana, that clear recognition of ourself as I alone. Previously, we were aware of ourselves as I am this body. But when we look within, what can we find as I? There's nothing to find as I other than I itself. So I am only I. That's what Bhagavan means by this spurana I am I, nan nan indru spuripu. Spuripu is a Tamil form of, means the same as spurana. Spur means to be clear. Like in Tamil, we say, if you want to say in Tamil that you've understood something, you say, enaku puriyum, it is clear to me. So puri or spuri, the Tamil verb puri comes from the Sanskrit word spur, which means to be clear. So that clarity, that fresh clarity, that clear recognition of ourself as ourself alone, I am I. So if without leaving that, if one if we just remain as we are without letting go of that clear recognition of ourselves as I am I alone, it will completely annihilate jiva bodha in the form of ahankara. It will annihilate the sense of individuality in the form of ego, which is ego, which is called this body is I. In other words, the ego, the false awareness I am this body, will be destroyed by this clear recognition I am I. But we need to hold on to that clear recognition. In other words, we need to hold on to self-attentiveness, not let go of it, and just be as we actually are. And then, like fire that catches on camphor, it will itself be extinguished. It will itself be extinguished means the spuripu will be extinguished. Why does Bhagavan say it will be extinguished? He calls it a sporana or spuripu when it is because of its newness, because it's shining forth. When we recognize it, but we are always nothing other than I, then the newness will be extinguished. That is it. It seems to appear in you, then we recognize it is not something new, it is sahaja. When we recognize I am I as our own very nature, as sahaja, then that is what Bhagavan describes as the subsidence or the extinguishment of sparana. Just like like a flame that catches hold of a piece of camphor, it will continue burning until the whole camphor is burnt. Once the camphor is burnt, once ego is annihilated, once ego is completely eradicated, what appears as a new, fresh clarity will be recognized as sparana, as sahaja. This is the, what he calls metaphorically the subsidence of sparana. And this alone is said by sages to be mukti. So this Bhagavan talked of I am I both as the means and as the goal. Because what does he mean by I am I? It is the recognition of ourself as ourself alone. And that alone is the reality. As he says in verse 43 of Akshramlai, tane tane tatvam. Tane tane, tan means oneself. Tane means oneself alone. Tane tane means oneself alone is oneself. That alone is the reality. Idane tane katvai Arunachala. And how can Arunachala will reveal this to us, but how does Arunachala reveal this to us? In the very next verse, Bhagavan says, Tirumbiya ham, turning within, Tane dinamaha kankan, see yourself daily with the inner eye, Terium, it will be known. What will be known? It will be known, Tane tan, nan nan, I alone am I, oneself alone is oneself. Endranaya Arunacha. That is what Arunacha is eternally teaching through silence. Is but if we turn within, what will be revealed is tane tane. Oneself alone is oneself. Nan nan aham aham. I alone am I. Om namo Bhagavate Sri Arunachala Ramanaya.